Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur heutigen Podcast-Folge. Mein Name ist Johannes Ungerer und wie immer freue ich mich, dass du eingeschaltet hast. Ja, ich bin hier gerade im Urlaub und hatte deswegen auch heute ein paar Schwierigkeiten mit meinem Interviewgast, die Internet-Connection herzustellen. Wir haben ungefähr eine halbe Stunde gebraucht, haben es jetzt aber geschafft. Und heute habe ich einen wirklich sehr inspirierenden Gast mit einer sehr inspirierenden Geschichte auch. Und zwar habe ich heute John Lundquist hier im Interview. Und er ist der Gründer einer wirklich riesigen Marke, die auch physische Produkte verkauft, mit der Besonderheit, dass sie sich von Anfang an eben auf den Verkauf über Amazon konzentriert haben. Und letztes Jahr, 2016, haben sie die 8 Millionen Umsatz-Euro-Marke geknackt und für dieses Jahr peilen sie die 12 Millionen Euro Umsatz an in 2017, was wirklich ja eine unglaubliche große Zahl ist und wirklich ein Vorbild für jeden, der da auch irgendwie durchstarten möchte. John ist auch gar nicht mehr unbedingt im operativen Amazon-Geschäft tätig, aber das wird er uns heute alles erzählen. Und deswegen switche ich auch jetzt wieder auf Englisch und ja, dann geht's heute ganz, ganz tief ins Detail zu allen wichtigen Infos und Tipps. Welcome, John, to the podcast, to Level Up. Very nice to have you here. Thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah. Let us know about you. Tell us perhaps a little bit of your story, just so the people can know who you are, what you are doing, and yeah, what did you do in the past? I think you have a very inspiring story for our listeners. So yeah, just let us hear a little bit about you.
Okay, yeah, it's a weird one anyway. So to sum up, I'm 42 years old. I'm sitting here with my wife and two kids in Uppsala, Stockholm, close to Stockholm, Sweden, and my background is that I did finance in university, and I don't know why I did that. I guess I did it because everybody else did it, and I thought that was the way to get a job. No real plan there. So before that, though, I had many businesses on my own, smaller ventures, you know, selling homemade lotteries, stuff like that. I once bought beer from Germany, but I would resell in Sweden, stuff like that. Anyway,
I think it's a good beer. The German beer is very good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this one wasn't that good. It was the cheapest stuff you had, I think. But anyway, after a while working for a while, I realized that maybe I should not be an employee because I never really liked it. I tried many different jobs and I did okay, but I never enjoyed it. So that kind of took me to online poker, which I did for a few years as well. I made a living that way. And then I traveled a bunch during that time. So I spent some time in Germany too, actually, but most of the time in Latin countries, Guatemala, Spain, Asia, countries like that. And then I met a few Americans and they kind of got me introduced to the whole Amazon thing. So to make a long story short, I moved to China, I rented my apartment in Sweden, started a company in the US, which it turned out later that I didn't really need. But anyway, I moved to China and the rest is history, sort of. So in the beginning, this was 2011, I think June or something. In the beginning, I would just basically sell anything that I could make a profit on. So it was mainly cell phone cases, chargers, similar products. And then after about 2-3 months, I realized that I need to add some value. I can't just buy stuff and sell it because anybody can do that. So I need to have some kind of added value, which then turned out to be the trademark, the Friendly Swede. So that's how it all started. Feel free to interrupt with questions.
Sure. So in the beginning, the phone cases had no branding at all?
No, none whatsoever.
And have you been successful with selling them?
I mean, not really, but in the beginning, it wasn't really competitive. This was kind of new to everybody. For those of you who played poker, you should compare it to, you know, in the beginning, you could play poker and win money by just basically knowing the rules. So that's the way it was in the beginning.
Because there were so many people just putting all their money without really knowing what they were doing.
Yeah, and I didn't know what I was doing either, but I knew a little bit better than some of the others. that was my okay. slight edge, maybe. But then after only 2 or 3 months, it got pretty competitive selling generic products. So I more or less stopped doing that, or maybe after half a year, I wasn't doing that at all anymore. I was only doing the friendly Sweden. But I still didn't really add any value to the products. I mean, I was still selling more or less the same products. It's just that I, you know, I had this guarantee because it was my trademark. So I put my logo on the products I was selling. So I would back it with, you know, good customer service, get good product reviews, put my own images, stuff like that.
And how did you get the idea of putting your own brand on the products? Was it something from the US?
Yeah, I think I saw a few competitors doing something like that. And I thought that seems like a good idea because then you can own your product listing. You don't have to be competing with everybody who's selling similar to stuff. You can have your own. So I wasn't the first doing this at all. There were a few others doing it, and they were doing, some were doing well, some were not doing well. But what I mainly focused on in the beginning then, which is something that everybody does now, was getting reviews, product reviews. Because I thought if I were a buyer, I would, you know, I would really care about the product reviews. That's kind of a way to ensure that you get a good quality product.
Interesting. And has there been any, like a business model around that thing, like the Amazon FBA business model? There are like huge podcasts in the US and in Germany already. Talking about it. Has there been anything like that?
If there had been anything prior to this, you mean? I didn't know of anything.
Or did you have to figure it all out?
No, that was the thing. I had to do a bunch of trial and error. So I did all kinds of, tried all kinds of stuff. But there weren't any podcasts or any, you know, Amazon FBA courses that I was aware of. Let me rephrase that. There were a couple of courses, but they were basically clueless back then. There wasn't anything like, you know, amazing.com, stuff like that. The few FBA courses that were out there, they were mainly talking about, you know, selling other people's products. There weren't any real private labeling courses, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, not sure. And in the beginning, have you been a one-man show, or how did you organize all that stuff?
Yeah, in the beginning it was me. And since I lived in China, I would have a few Chinese girls helping me out with, you know, getting products and paying suppliers and doing everything that needed to be done in Chinese. So the people I had working with me in the beginning were a few Chinese girls. And it was a pretty lean operation up until 3.5 years ago. It started getting a little bit bigger.
And you say you see a lean operation. So what were the 20% I say you focused on? What was it?
What do you say? The 20%? Or what do you mean?
Like the most important things you say, right. You started very
basically
lean.
I basically only focused on getting, you know, the right product and getting good reviews. That was the only thing I really cared about.
Price reviews. Yeah, it's similar today still on Amazon. Yeah, like the most important thing is if you want to, I don't know, progress as quick as possible, you just have to get new products and also get good reviews, because I think everything that has like 4 or less stars won't get any
reviews
any sales
still. But these days it's not a unique selling point to have good reviews these days. I mean, it's just
true.
Something
That's
you
true.
Have to have, otherwise you're dead. Back then, it was kind of my edge on the market was that, I actually have good reviews and I have many reviews. Most people had shitty reviews and they didn't have many.
So I think
back then, you can't even imagine how different it was.
It's very interesting to hear it. So,
what else is there to say? Another thing I focused a lot on that still goes today, I think, is trying to find the sweet spots on the market, you know, where there's demand but there's not that much supply, but that goes for everything everywhere every time in history, I guess. So
we always call it the gold nuggets on
Amazon. Exactly.
They are still there, so
but
still worth
a
time
of searching. Be more creative, I guess you need to be more of an inventor these days. You can't just find something on Alibaba and hope for it not to be on Amazon.
You really have to think about the unique selling point.
Exactly. Yeah.
I have one more question about your decision of just starting to live in China. Was it just that you were traveling a lot and also visiting China and you liked it, or was it on business purpose?
Yeah, it was purely business, and I wanted to do something new. I was playing poker at the time, and then there was this American guy who said, "Hey, listen, dude, I'll help you out in the beginning. Come here, stay here for a while, and I'll show you what I'm doing, and I'll teach you the ropes of doing business in China, sort of." So that's how it started. So he helped me a lot in the beginning. And then the decision to live in China, it was more like I didn't have a choice. I had to do that if I wanted to get shit done. Things were different back then. You know, it wasn't as easy to source something from overseas. Alibaba wasn't what it is today. Chinese suppliers weren't as used to dealing with foreigners as they are today, etc., etc. So I sort of had to be there to get things working.
But that also has always the opportunity, because the more difficult it is, the less competition you also have.
Yeah, I know. I love it when things are, tricky. Because it usually means that a lot of people stay away.
So I guess you're just, would you consider yourself as a person that just does like stuff that is not conventional, is like very different to what everyone else is doing?
I want to be like that. I'm not sure if I always am like that. I know I've been like that a few times in my past. I mean, I can't, the number of times that people have told me that I'm an idiot, I can't count them. Quitting my corporate job with a nice title and a nice salary and without having anything lined up, a bunch of stuff like that, traveling and I don't know, I playing poker for a living, all these things. And same thing with going to China. I remember a few people telling me when before I left, they're saying like, yeah, good luck with that,
We see you then back here in a month.
Yeah. Well, sort of, they were kind of like, yeah, okay. You could see it in their eyes that they had zero faith in that I wouldn't be successful.
It's
pretty cool to get back then, 2 years after that, to get back to Sweden and be like, well, listen, this is what's happened. So that was nice.
And but two years after that?
It was a perfect opportunity to start when I started and everything. So there was a very good timing involved as well.
Yeah. And 2 years after that, how was your business going? Have you had many products online?
Yeah. It's doing great. I mean, I had like zero cost and high profit on everything, and had an annual turnover of maybe, I don't know, maybe 1.5 or 2 million euros after 2 years.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. Super cool. I was so excited about it. So, but at the same time, I was also pretty fed up with working 80 hours a week. So that was, I after 1.5 years, I started feeling like, damn, I need to, start working less and I need to get help.
Sounds interesting. And how did you do that? How did you start outsourcing the most time intense?
I started with trying to get the people in China to help me with some of the stuff that I was doing. And I did this way too late. I should have done it earlier. Anyway, I started getting help with the small things, and then I got help with more and more and more and more. And that finally, after 2.5 years, I got myself a CEO, a Swedish girl that I knew before I asked her. I basically just said, hey, listen, what are you doing in your life right now? And would you like to help me with this and this? And she helped me with this and that, which were complex legal issues. And then after she had worked for about 3 months, I asked her if she wanted to become the CEO later on, because she was awesome. So, and she said, yes, I would like that very much. In about 3 months, just give me some time to adjust to the whole operation and everything. So that's what happened.
Nice. And the Chinese workers in the beginning, what do you think about their responsibility? Because I think what is very interesting is to have someone like a sourcing agent in China or in Asia. Did it work fine with them, or were the cultural differences really, really big there so that it was very difficult? What was your feeling about it?
It's a combination, right? I got lucky. I got really good people, most of them anyway. A few had to go along the way, but the ones that still help us, that still work with us, they are amazing. But they have gotten to know us over the years, and we have gotten to know them. So I guess we adapted to each other, adjusted to each other's different cultures. In the beginning, there were quite a few misunderstandings. You know, yes doesn't always mean yes in China. Well, if they say yes, it means I hear that you're talking, basically.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, well, that was my experience anyway. So that was a big difference, you know, after having done business in Sweden and in Germany, where it's more like you say something, they say, yes, I get it, then you don't speak about it more because, you know, they got it. But that's not the way it was in China. That was one big difference. And then this whole thing with the view on quality, how you perceive quality, it's very different, I would say.
Okay. And did you use like quality inspections then, or did
you
inspect all the quality yourself?
I inspected everything myself, more or less.
Okay. Yeah, sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. That's what I was doing. I mean, I was sitting there in the office and goods would come in and I would look at them and I would say, this doesn't work. This needs to go back to the supplier. Do you understand why? No, Laobao, tell us why. And then I was like, well, listen, it smells. It shouldn't smell toxic, or it was supposed to have been red, it's blue, or it can't have the Apple logo on it because that would be a trademark infringement, stuff like that.
You really had a product with an Apple logo on it?
Yeah, I did. That was hilarious. I got 2,000 chargers from one of the suppliers, and the funny thing is, I was like, this doesn't work. This is counterfeit Apple price. I can't sell this. This is impossible. I can't take this. They're like, no, it's not real Apple. We just put the logo on. And then I'm like, well, I can't sell this. Do you understand why? They're like, no, we don't understand. It's going to sell better if it has an Apple logo on it. That's their argument. And I was like, I tried to explain to them the whole thing with the intellectual property, da, 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 you know. So, yeah.
Did they understand it today?
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Was it very difficult?
After I refused to accept the products, I hope they did, yeah.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah.
So you just said like some minutes ago that you would say that you are really were too late outsourcing the time intense tasks in the beginning, that you were too long doing everything by yourself. And I think as our listeners, many of them are or also want to be successful entrepreneurs that really also outsource these time intense tasks. My question is for you, what would you give as an advice to someone who is like in a state of his business where he wants to grow, but he just can't because he has too much work to be done in his everyday life? Like all the tasks that always come back and back and back.
Don't be afraid to let go of things to others. I mean, I was too late doing that as well. I have this... I'm very anal about things. I want them to be a specific way. And then I'm like, I better do it myself because otherwise it won't be done the way I want it to. But you got to let go.
So just don't be afraid.
That's what I would say anyway. And of course, the outcome will never be as it would be if you did it yourself. But you got to let go, you know, otherwise you'll go crazy.
Yeah, and sometimes it will even be better if you like outsource something to
someone
who is just a good photographer, for example, for your product pictures.
Oh, yeah.
That you don't do it by yourself.
Oh, dude, in the beginning I did my photos myself with my iPhone. They were terrible, you know, and I would be sitting in Photoshop trying to edit them and I didn't know how Photoshop worked, and I mean it was a disaster. So
I feel you, so I did the same thing in the beginning.
Oh my god, yeah. That was incredible. A disaster. The only good thing was that the competitors kind of sucked at it too. So even though my images were shitty, their images were sometimes worse anyway. So
It's always the question about the competitors as well.
Exactly.
And also with the reviews, for example, on Amazon, if all your competitors have like 1,500 reviews, you cannot go in with 10 or 15 reviews. That just is difficult.
But you need to have another edge then as well. Like I said, I haven't done Amazon now for 3 years. I better be clear on that. You know, I haven't been involved in the day-to-day stuff for about 3 years now. And so much has happened since, you know.
Oh yeah,
So
extremely.
I'm not an Amazon expert at all anymore. It's not what I do. It's not what I'm good at. I mean, I know the basics. The basics are still like get good reviews, have a good offer, have unique selling points, but all the tips and tricks, I don't know them anymore.
Moin, Hannes hier. Cool, dass du bei uns beim Podcast wieder eingeschaltet hast. Ich hoffe, du hast aus der heutigen Folge schon viel mitnehmen können, was du auch für dich persönlich erfolgreich umsetzen kannst. Ich gehe mal davon aus, auch weil du jemand bist hier, der unseren Podcast hörst, dass du jemand bist, der mehr vom Leben möchte. Ja, sei das mehr Geld, mehr Freiheit, mehr Sicherheit, ja, für die Familie zum Beispiel. Und du bist auf Amazon FBA gestoßen und hast gemerkt, hier ist das Potenzial, um wirklich ein erfolgreiches Unternehmen aufzubauen und ein erfolgreiches Standbein, das mir eben auch ein Nebeneinkommen generiert, mit dem ich mir diese Freiheiten ermöglichen kann. Und gleichzeitig ist es eventuell so, dass du auch gemerkt hast, okay, das ist hier kein Zuckerschlecken, sondern es gibt schon auch so ein paar Themen, wo man sich echt die Zähne ausbeißen kann. Ja, zum Beispiel die Produktrecherche. Ja, ist das Produkt, das ich mir rausgesucht habe, wirklich so gut? Kann ich das wirklich erfolgreich verkaufen? Und vor allem, kann ich damit auch Gewinn machen und nicht nur Umsatz? Oder Thema Zertifikate, Patente. Ja, sind meine Produkte wirklich sicher? Kann ich sicher gehen, dass eben nicht innerhalb von wenigen Wochen oder Monaten da eine Abmahnung reinflattert und ich irgendwie, ja, mein Unternehmen direkt gegen die Wand fahre? Und ich kann dir sagen, das war bei mir am Anfang ganz genauso und es geht, glaube ich, auch einigen anderen so. Ich habe aber gute Neuigkeiten und zwar wurde letztes Jahr AMC Ventures veröffentlicht. AMC Ventures ist ein Amazon FBA Inkubator, der die perfekten Bedingungen schafft für Unternehmer, die sagen, okay, ich möchte mir ein erfolgreiches Unternehmen mit Amazon aufbauen und dabei halt keine schwerwiegenden Fehler machen, die mir eventuell die Existenz kosten könnten. Der AMC Ventures Inkubator ist ein Konzept aus den Staaten und ist so aufgebaut, dass du hier persönlich Unterstützung erhältst von den besten Experten Deutschlands und somit einfach die größtmögliche Sicherheit hast, dass die Produkte, die du auf den Markt bringst, auch wirklich Erfolg haben. Der zweite Punkt ist, dass du einfach extrem viele Fehler vermeiden wirst und dadurch langfristig extrem viel Zeit und Geld sparen wirst. Und der dritte Punkt ist einfach das erfolgsorientierte Umfeld, das du an die Hand bekommst bei AMC Ventures, das dich in guten und in schlechten Zeiten in jeder Lebenslage unterstützt. Klingt gut, oder? Versprochen wird natürlich für gewöhnlich viel, gehalten aber nur wenig und aus diesem Grund wird eben bei AMC Ventures ein sechsstelliger Umsatz auch garantiert. Wenn du dazu mehr erfahren möchtest und allgemein auch mehr zur Bewerbung und zum Ablauf des Ganzen, dann schau jetzt vorbei auf www.amcventures.de. Du gehst durch deine Bewerbung keinerlei Verpflichtungen ein oder so, musst dir da gar keine Sorgen machen und ja, das Ganze läuft so ab, dass es eine schriftliche und eine telefonische Bewerbung gibt. Das heißt, zunächst füllst du auf der Seite einfach kurz ein Formular aus. Es dauert 4 bis 5 Minuten und dann, ja, wird sich einfach jemand mit dir in Verbindung setzen und mit den zielstrebigsten Unternehmern wird dann ein Gespräch ausgemacht, ein Telefontermin, in dem dann einfach von beiden Seiten geschaut wird, ob es hier zu einer internen Zusammenarbeit kommen kann, ob das Ganze Sinn macht. Also schau jetzt auf jeden Fall vorbei auf www.amcventures.de. Du hast nichts zu verlieren und alles zu gewinnen. Mach's gut, dir noch einen schönen Tag und viel Spaß mit der weiteren Folge. Ciao. Yeah, no, that's no problem. We talk a lot about that in all our other episodes here on the podcast. So if someone really is interested in getting the details and the deep details that nowhere else are, then they should listen to the other podcast. Like, yes, I think yes. Two weeks ago, we had Scott Volker on the podcast. Perhaps you know him. He's the host of The Amazing Seller. I think like the biggest Amazon podcast. And he had some really great advice.
Yeah, those podcasts didn't exist back then. Now there are a bunch of really good podcasts. And they all know what they're talking about. So you got to understand this. You know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, it was like amateur evening. You know, like nobody knew what they were doing. And everybody was like trying stuff.
Yeah, but that's interesting too, I think.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a lot of fun. You know, you would figure something out. You would be like, listen, I just did this, you know, and I started sending emails to my customers and I started getting 10 times as many reviews. Oh my God, you did that. That's awesome. Let's try that, you know, and stuff like
that.
Nice.
Yeah. And you were very successful, like you said, about 2 million in 1 year, like a lot of time ago when no one else was talking about their business model.
I did well. I made a lot of mistakes too, but I guess the trick was just trying a bunch of stuff. Some stuff worked out, some didn't work out at all, and I stuck to the stuff that worked.
Yeah, nice. So,
but I remember when the amazing, it was called the Amazing Selling Machine back then, when they started showing up. And I remember when they came with their first course, and I saw the intro, just the 1 minute intro, this is what we'll be teaching people. I was like, shit. And I saw that. I was like, now things are going to change. Because back then it was only like me and a few other sellers that were really focused on getting reviews, providing good customer service, stuff like that. And then they started promoting their course, and then I realized, okay, things are going to change in a major way over the coming year. And things changed, yeah. Suddenly everybody was there getting good reviews, you know, understanding stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think that's the normal course.
Yeah.
Some niche is very profitable, that yeah. people go there and people explain other people how to get in there.
Yeah.
And yeah. yeah, but I think it's still extremely fun, and I really still like to sell there.
Oh,
but
yeah, no,
it's still very
good.
Interesting that you, made that shift from the seller to an, you told me you are now more focusing on the general entrepreneurship
and I love
investing
it.
In companies.
Yeah,
that sounds very, very nice. And like, how did you do that shift from the, from selling own products to just outsource everything and being an investor and helping new companies to grow?
Well, I wanted to do it because I always been a fan of shows like Shark Tank and Dragon's Den. You know, somebody comes and pitches something for 2 minutes and people say like, oh, no, we're not going to invest in you. And I always liked that stuff. And I love meeting new people. I love entrepreneurship. I love hearing about new ideas. So as soon as I moved from China, I started looking into how do I get in touch with, you know, networks where people do these things. So I just Googled it and I met one guy, and then he introduced me to some other people, and then the ball just got rolling from there. So now I have small equities in about 10 different businesses that they're not doing Amazon. They're doing all kinds of weird stuff. You know, one is doing solar power. One is doing computer games. Another one is doing ecological vegan cheese. Well, that one actually went bankrupt. But anyway, you know, a bunch of different things. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your first steps. So you just had the plan to becoming an investor, and then you just use all the network you had. And,
well, I didn't have any, so I just Googled it, and then I found one guy, and then he introduced me to another guy, and after a while, you know, the ball just got rolling, and now I'm, you know, now people know that I do these things, so now entrepreneurs come to me and say, hey, I heard you, you know, you like entrepreneurship, and you invest in businesses sometimes, would you like me to pitch my thing to you? And I'm like, yeah, sure, let's meet. So
you get a lot of emails?
Yeah, not that many. I mean, I have one or two meetings a week regarding, you know, new businesses. And most of them, usually it's just one meeting or two meetings. And then it's like, yeah, good luck. You know, not for me, but good luck. But sometimes it's super interesting. And then I invest. And then maybe I also take a place on the board and take a more active role, you know. If I can, if there's something I can provide.
Yeah, and it shows that everything, I think, yeah, you can just achieve everything. You just have to set your goal and make a plan and then go for it. You say you even had no network, and now you're like an investor in 10 companies. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's awesome. Very nice. I mean, I focused on it, though. I mean, I told everybody, hey, listen, here I am. This is what I want to be doing. I'm not doing it yet, but, you know, tell people. And it was not that hard, because if you say, you tell people that, hey, listen, I have money to invest. There's usually a shortage of money everywhere.
Yeah.
So a bunch of people will approach you and say, hey, listen, I want you to invest in this or that and this or that. And most of it is shit, but there are a few gems out there, and you got to, you know, find them.
Yeah. Just another question. We have one question from our community.
Yeah.
And this was like, what was the hardest moment in your entire career?
when I had no money, and I had to pay my suppliers, and I had to pay my employees, and I had money coming from the US, and it got stuck somehow, somewhere on the way to China. I don't know. I remember sitting there in my office / apartment in China thinking like, how the fuck am I going to solve this? I mean, I was down to my last line of credit with my bank. It was my personal credit back then as well. And But I still had some hope because I had a profitable business running. So it's more like a cash flow issue. You know, I just didn't have any cash. I was making money, but I spent it all on inventory all the time. So I kept growing. So I never had money in the beginning. It was super annoying. But I remember that point when I looked at my balance, my bank balance was like minus 92,000 Swedish crowns. And, you know, I had money for food for one day. My employees were going to be paid in a few days. The suppliers were going to come with goods they had to pay. And I didn't have any cash. So that was pretty annoying. I remember being a bit worried about that.
Yeah, I imagine that. Yeah. For me, it was the same problem in the beginning where I was not minus, but I had just the problem that I was not able to grow. Yeah. Even though I had the knowledge, I knew which products would be next, but I just had no money. And I didn't have the balls to go to the bank and ask for money because, I don't know, I just had a bad feeling like using other people's money. So
yeah, I hate that too.
I just had to wait until my new products had a nice cash flow and continue growing.
Yeah, same here. I waited until I got the money. I mean, I had the money in the US, but I had to move it from the US to China, which was very complicated back then as well. So there were all these logistical issues. But anyway, I mean, it all worked out eventually, but it was kind of troubling in the beginning. And I also remember this time when one of my friends came to me and said, "Hey, dude, you're in trouble here. You know, you're not making enough money and it's going to be hard for you to make this work." You know, and I looked at the numbers and I realized, damn, he's right. You know, this is going to be tough. But it worked out anyway.
Yeah. So. Do you have any advice for anyone who will be perhaps in that situation for his first time in the future? What would you say, or what would you give as an advice for someone who just perhaps, I don't know, gets into a big trouble and doesn't know how to solve it?
Ask people, I guess. But I mean, my experience so far has been that things usually work out. I mean, not by themselves. You got to make them work out. But you know, when you're in trouble, you usually become pretty creative and start thinking, how do I fix this? And you start thinking more out of the box. And I don't know what to say in general. Just don't give up. You know, that's, I mean, I'm speaking to this entrepreneur right now. I'm going to invest in his business. And the whole thing was supposed to have started about a year ago. And it's been delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed over and over again. You know, and he had investors that came and then they left and they said, "Oh, it's not for me." And then he had problems. He had all kinds of problems. But he just doesn't fucking quit, that guy. And he's going to be successful, I'm sure. And now he's on the verge of getting it all started. It's going to start in a few months now. But it was supposed to have started August last year, you know, and he's just doesn't give up. So that's the best trick, I guess, the best advice.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of investors saying that they don't invest into companies, but they invest into people.
Yeah.
Is that true for you too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
110%. Wow. I mean, there are so many good ideas, you know, business ideas. I mean, just look at this Amazon thing. I know a bunch of people who started more or less at the same time as I and some others did. And the range of, you know, success has been very different. You know, some people have done great. Some people just basically quit and never got anywhere. And everybody basically have the same business idea, right? So it really depends on the person. So there's no shortage of good ideas out there. The shortage is more like people who can actually execute and get shit done.
Okay, so John, anything, another question from our community was, if you would start all over again, what would you do differently?
Everything? No, but with the, you know, you guys know exactly how it works now, right? But in the beginning, it took me so long to realize, well, it took everybody a long time to realize. I mean, I guess I would do everything differently. I would never have started a company in the U.S., I would have focused on private labeling from the beginning, of course. I would have, I would have done everything the way it's supposed to be done, right? I would probably not have moved to China. I would not have stayed in management myself for such a long time. I would have outsourced this as soon as I could because I was not really a good manager. I would have gotten help much earlier. I mean, you hear it, everything.
Yeah. Why do you say you would not have moved to China? That's interesting.
Well, I probably would have moved to China because I needed to do that the way things were set up, but I probably would have tried to outsource myself faster, I think.
Okay.
Or wait, let me think about this. I guess it was needed back then. I guess I really needed to stay there, the way things were back then. I guess I needed it, maybe.
Yeah.
It's hard to say because things are so different now. You know, the Chinese suppliers are so used to, to working with foreigners now. I don't think they were in to the same extent as they are now.
Okay. And right now, as you're investing into 10 companies, and I think the Friendly Suite is going extremely well.
Let me correct you. It's not going very well right now. We've struggled a bit. You know, we haven't been creative enough. We kind of become a little bit lazy. So we're not going to go bankrupt or anything, but we're struggling now. We're not at all doing as well as we were some years ago.
Okay.
So
that's interesting to hear.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty long story. I mean, I guess we got a little bit comfortable. You know, we thought we knew everything sort of. So we started setting up processes and structures around, you know, the way we did things instead of just constantly keeping our ear to the ground and trying to evolve as the market changes.
And being innovative.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of lost that over the last 2-3 years, I would say. If you look at our current best sellers, and many of them are old products that were launched like 3-4 years ago, and we haven't really been coming up with that much new and innovative recently. We will be, though. I mean, we address this. We talk a lot about it, so we know what our problems are now. If you'd asked me about a year ago, I probably would say that everything's hunky-dory. But it's not. So we got challenges ahead, you know, if you want to stay competitive.
Okay. And I think that's extremely important for every big company to just keep trying to be innovative and always be growing, because that's how I think a company lives, from growing and not from being stagnant.
Exactly.
Is that a word?
Stagnant maybe is the word.
Stagnantly.
I'm not sure.
Well, you can see my English is not the best. So.
Oh, it's awesome.
I try my best.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree with you. But I've seen this happen in other businesses too, and I see it in myself. If I look at myself, I see that I've become a bit lazy. You know, I haven't been involved that much in anything the last 3 years. I've been focused more on, you know, stuff like getting kids and investing in other companies, and I kind of let go of the Friendly Suite a bit. And even though we had great people, the people who worked with the Friendly Suite, they were not the founders. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it still needed a little bit more from me, I think, when it comes to the innovation part, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, then again, if I hadn't had great people, the business would have died 3 years ago when I left, and it didn't, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm so happy that I had the pleasure of working with all these, you know, long story.
What I think is great that you have been capable of, like, you noticed that you want to do something differently, like investing into other companies and not being involved in all the daily tasks of the Friendly Suite.
Yeah.
And you just, you succeeded in, mostly outsourcing
entire
business, and just focus on what you really love. And I think that's very inspiring, because you just say you want to get kids. Do you have children, actually?
Yeah, two of them. One of them is here on the floor next to me right now.
I heard sometimes there was some.
Yeah, one is 6 months old and one is almost 2 years old. So that's been a main priority change as well. I mean, suddenly, you know, the business thing is not everything I think about. You're right about this. You know, like, I got bored with Amazon there after 2-2.5 years. It's like, and I was working way too much. I was working constantly, all the time. You know, I would wake up in the middle of the night, check my emails, and then there would always be some fucking policy violation or you name it, you know, that would need me addressing it right away. So I would sit there during the night, and I would work, and after a while, I just got burnt out, you know, it's just fed up with it. So I really felt like I need to do something else, you know? And then I started doing this, and I love it, and I still love it, and I can see myself doing stuff like this the rest of my life.
And it's always the same type or way to address those things? You noticed that you want to change something, and then you just set a goal, make a plan, and focus on that.
Yeah, you should.
And that's how you change things in your life, I think.
Yeah, no, you're right. You should make a plan, but most of the time I just do it.
You didn't.
Okay. Take it as it comes, you know. But yeah, you should have a plan. That's probably way better.
No, you can skip the plan if you want to.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't suggest that. But that's the way I've done it. You know, it's been pretty spontaneous most of the time. It's like, okay, let's try this and see what happens. And it's like, well, that didn't go well. But at least you learned something from it. So.
Try and error. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we end this episode, what is your vision for the future? What is your plan? What do you want to do in the next 5 years? Where do you want to be in the next 10 years? Can you say that?
Absolutely. We're thinking about moving to a warmer country because Sweden's cold. Not today. Today is beautiful. That's one thing. The other thing I want to keep doing is just keep investing in entrepreneurs and working with entrepreneurs and being involved in entrepreneurship in general. I love that stuff. So those are the two things, I guess. And the third thing would be, like, hopefully, you know, we get to live forever. Right, if you read about Murphy's Law and everything. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to the coming 20, 30 years with AI and everything.
Yeah, extremely interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. If I can recommend a page for somebody, for people to look at it, it would be, what's it called again? Waitbutwhy.com. There's this guy there who writes about all kinds of things, and he wrote two articles about artificial intelligence, among other things, and those are extremely interesting.
Okay, I will put that into the show notes.
Oh yeah,
and everyone who's interested in that can just check it out.
Everybody should check Waitbutwhy in general. It's one of the best sites there are. Yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone should just at least have like a general knowledge about those topics because. I think they will have a huge impact in our future.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And I think they are very interesting too. It's very scary. Yeah.
Scary and interesting. Too. Yeah. There's a lot to be said about that. But that's, you know, like 30 years from now, I mean, how will we, you know, will it be singularity or, you know, all that stuff? It's pretty mind boggling when you think about it. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's true. Okay. John, thank you very much for, that you took your time. It was a very nice talk to have you and, don't worry about your children in the background.
Don't worry.
I think that just makes this episode a little bit more sympathetical. So don't worry.
Good stuff. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
Yeah, just one last thing. If someone perhaps is listening who has an idea perhaps, and now he heard that you are an investor and perhaps he wants to pitch his idea, where can someone get into contact with you?
Well, just Google my name. But then again, I basically only invest in companies that are based where I live. I want to be able to, you know, go out and have lunch with whoever I invested in. And that would be close to Stockholm, Uppsala.
Okay. I don't think we have so many listeners in Stockholm, but
yeah.
Perhaps. Okay. Thank you very much and have a very nice day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, James.